We take a leap now from the real to the fictional, but we're still staying at the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
A mauve dusk was yielding to thunderheads mounding like enormous eggplants. The evening was electric with the feel of an impending storm. The speedway was another hatter's tea party of noise and turmoil. The sweaty, buggy air reeked of hot rubber, exhaust, sun-baked flesh, and fried food. Amplified announcements barely carried over the ear-splitting whine of engines screaming around a mile and a half of asphalt.
That's author and forensic anthropologist Kathy Reichs reading from her latest Temperance Brennan mystery, Flesh and Bones. You might be familiar with Temperance Brennan. Her adventures form the basis of the Fox TV series Bones. Brennan's latest case kicks off with the grisly discovery, a body stuffed in a drum full of asphalt, tossed into a landfill by the racetrack just as the biggest racing event of the year is about to start. And Kathy Reichs is with us now in our New York bureau to talk about her creation. Thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So you live in Charlotte.
I do.
A very big racing town. Can't really get away from NASCAR in Charlotte. And normally I would ask you something like, why set your book at a racetrack? But actually what I want to ask you is, why did it take you so long?
Well, that's what my friends kept saying. I have some friends that are big fans and follow friends of the drivers and follow all the races. And every time I start a new book, they say, put it in NASCAR. So they finally wore me down. And I'm glad. It was fun.
You say that you prefer to send Temperance to places that you're familiar with. But you weren't that familiar with NASCAR. What was that like?
I wasn't. I'm familiar with Charlotte, obviously. But I had to do a lot of research. So I contacted all of these people I know. I had contacted drivers and crew chiefs and owners and peppered them all with questions.
And you got a tour of the racetrack. You went and...
I did. I got a tour of the racetrack from Marcus Smith, who runs the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And I think the whole time he was trying to show me all the wonders of the track, I'm looking at this landfill next door saying, wait a minute, tell me about this dump, because I'm thinking this is a great place to put a body.
A body.
Yes.
And that's where the body ended up.
Exactly.
The book. What about Bones, the show Bones, which is based on your books, and CSI? You know, do you feel like there's so much criminal science that goes on in these cases and that's how they're solved, you know, is by some of this criminal. Does it give people a misleading idea of how a lot of these murders really are solved?
Yeah, not just murders. It's called the CSI effect. I just addressed the American Bar Association on this topic. The idea that jurors have way, way too high an expectation of science, that you're going to find that one scrap of skin in an acre of corn or something, and that's going to crack the case. And not only that, but I think there's also the CSI effects, if we want to call it that, impacts. I was just involved in the Casey Anthony case. And I think that also involves attorneys as well as expert witnesses in that expecting too much of science and pushing science way too far to the margins of where they should be presenting it in court.
What were you doing with the Casey Anthony case?
Well, I was the official forensic anthropologist on the defense team. I was reluctant initially, but I watched some of the media develop, and I was offended by how some of the media convicted this woman prior to her day in court, and that's not how our system is supposed to work. You're supposed to be convicted in court in front of a jury of your peers. So I did agree to, I did a full examination of the skeleton and visited the scene where the body was discovered.
When you're looking as a forensic anthropologist, when you go examine bones of something, what are you looking for? What exactly do you do?
When I'm brought into a case, usually at the request of a pathologist, and that's because the body's compromised. It's burned, mutilated, mummified, decomposed, dismembered, or it's just bones. For some reason, they need the forensic anthropology consult. It can vary what they want. It could be a question of ID. Who is it? If we have a completely unknown, I'll give them the age, the race, the sex, the height, any physical characteristics I can, so that the investigating officer can then match that profile against missing persons reports. Then we have a name. Then you can go out and get DNA or dental records or whatever, but you can't use those in a vacuum.
Did you get a lot of the details from this book and from most of your books from your actual work as an anthropologist?
Yes, I take ideas for my stories from either cases I've done or cases I've witnessed coming through our lab or our autopsy room, or maybe talking to colleagues attending professional meetings.
Did any of the storylines in Flesh and Bones come from real cases?
Well, we have done bodies in barrels in cement. Never done asphalt, but I figured, you know, I could figure that out. So,
and there was a lot in the book about how the body would decompose or not decompose because of the asphalt. And you had the hand was sticking up out of the
yes.
asphalt, so you could tell it was a body. Did you have to do a lot of research to figure
well,
out?
Actually, I saw cases of bodies in cement, and asphalt works pretty much the same. It's a pretty good sealant. It keeps you in there.
It's just like the character in this book was
exactly.
pretty much in the same solid state that he started in.
He or she. No spoilers.
That's right. That's right. Author and forensic anthropologist Kathy Reichs. Her latest book is Flesh and Bones. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll close this hour with an update to our top story. Hurricane Irene is passing through the Outer Banks of North Carolina with bands of wind and rain stretching as far north as New Hampshire. At least 5 people have died, including a surfer catching waves from the storm in Florida. The hurricane's eye is expected to brush New York City around 8 a.m. tomorrow. Today, Mayor Michael Bloomberg joined a chorus of local and state leaders urging residents in low-lying and coastal areas to evacuate or stay inside.
Now, we've been saying this all day. The time is running out. The rains will start getting heavier, and then the winds will make it very difficult and dangerous to be outside.
And the best way to preserve human life on the Jersey Shore is for there to be no human beings on the Jersey Shore, given what's about to come.
Please stay inside. We've had reports of folks who are beginning to venture out. You endanger your safety and the safety of the first responders who might come to try to rescue you. Please stay inside.
That's North Carolina Governor Bev Perdue, and before that, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. You can continue to follow news and updates on Hurricane Irene throughout the evening at our website, npr.org. For Saturday, that's Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Laura Sullivan. We're back at this time tomorrow. Until then, thanks for listening and have a great night.